Do you know that word crawler? It's not a pub crawl. College kids know what that is. That's different. Crawler is when text appears at the bottom of the screen. And, you know, usually it's moving across from right to left, and it's on a TV or a phone or a tablet, you know, things like that. Sometimes you'll see a crawler on a big screen at a sports bar. I don't go to those. Usually you'll see a crawl, and there's something under there that is, you ready for that new one? You got to keep going, man. it's something about the score of a game, or maybe if a... if a player has been traded, you know, things like that. Sometimes you'll see scrawlers on the Home Shopping Network. Now, I never watch that either. But, you know, when you go to those sort of crawls, you can see stuff about special offers and bargains, one-of-a-kind sales, you know, stuff like that. Usually, when we fly to San Jose, we'll go to Southwest Airlines, and so if you've ever been to that particular gate, that waiting area, there, you know, the cable news shows come on, and they have reviews, and that ticker goes across from one side to the other, and there's news stories and bulletins and public service announcements and all that sort of thing. Why do they do that? Why do they put those little creepy things at the bottom of the screen? I think they do it because it works, right? They capture our attention. Or is it that they distract us? They have a hook and we react. We notice. We lose focus and we hand over our attention so willingly. Sometimes they change colors or whether or not the letters are all capitalized or how many exclamation points. I mean, they got all kinds of tricks in order to catch us. We live in a culture that has developed a lexicon of contemporary public discourse. Do you have a phone in your pocket? I got one. I try not to look at it, but every once in a while, a little note comes up. And sure enough, there's a little thing on that little screen. It's not a creepy crawly thing, but it'll tell me something about what's happening in Congress, or the latest thing from the White House, or what's happening with international affairs, and I pull it out and I look at it. Usually not in the middle of a hospital call when I'm offering prayer with somebody, but you know what I mean. We have a crawl running through our heads. We have something going across as we live and think and wonder. And this lexicon of contemporary vocabulary has taught us phrases like storm surge and Richter scale. This crawl that travels through our brains has taught us a new lexicon of vocabulary with phrases like active shooter and thermonuclear. We now have new acronyms. We have DACA and FEMA and GOP and OMB and BLM. The broadcasters, they love to draft scripts for their on-air talent, and I wonder if they go through looking for words that will catch, words like danger or terror. Sometimes you watch them try not to smile as they're on screen as they offer up words like apocalyptic or catastrophic, right? Things calculated to raise the heart rate. Things designed to addict us to what's next. Things that will get us to sell products in between that and the next story. Is there another way? Is there another way for people of faith to live in a dangerous world? An alternative and deeply Christian way to know the pain of others? Is there some other spirit-powered and compassionate and wise way other than the world's systems that seem to unravel all around us all the time? Martin Luther had committed this one to memory. The Apostle Paul had committed this one to memory. Jesus himself had committed this one to memory. God is our refuge and strength, a very pleasant help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth should change, and though the mountains shake in the heart of the sea, though its waters rage and foam, though the mountains tremble at its tumult. Though the nations are in an uproar and the kingdoms totter, his voice is raised and the earth melts. He breaks the bow and he shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. Then comes the great line, "Be still and know that I am God." The technology of the news crawlers may be unique to our generation. That's new with us. We invented that. That's our fault. But it's not new. It's not new for people of faith to live in a culture, to live in a time where there's pain, to live in a place where there are challenges and surprises and disasters and wars and rumors of wars. It was nothing new to the biblical people. What crawled through their minds? Let me show you a picture. Do you recognize who that is? His name is Phil Yancey. He wrote a book in, the middle 70s, I think it was 1977. It's called Where is God When It Hurts? Now, I was trying to decide whether or not to tell you where I was in 1977. I was in college. So now you're doing the arithmetic. How old is the guy, really? Man. But I can remember, maybe I was the first one to read that book. Because it felt like I was living in a world that was unraveling. It felt to me like that moment, that instant, the horizon that I saw was pretty bleak. Will I ever retire? Will I ever have a family? A home? You're kidding me. Later on, Yancey had to write another book. He lived longer. We all lived longer. He went through things like the tsunami and Katrina. He went through things like Sandy Hook, and he wrote another one called The Question That Never Goes Away. Wrote that one in, I think it's 2013. And I found myself now picking it up yet again. He writes in one place, "The anthropologist Margaret Mead used to ask her lecture audiences, 'What would you say is the earliest sign of civilization? What would you say is the earliest sign of civilization?' She would field replies like, 'Well, the discovery of a clay pot,' or 'Tools made from iron,' or 'The first domesticated plant.' And then she would say, 'Well, here is my answer.' And she would hold up a human femur, the largest bone in the leg, pointing to a thickened area where the bone had healed after a fracture. Mead would go on to say, 'Such signs of healing are never found among the remains of the earliest, fiercest societies. In their skeletons, we find clues of violence, a rib pierced by an arrow, a crushed skull by a club. But this healed bone shows that someone must have cared for the injured person, hunted on his behalf, brought him food, served him at personal sacrifice. Contrary to nature's rule of survival of the fittest, we humans measure civilization by how we respond to the most vulnerable and the suffering.'" Is Yancey right? Is Mead right? When I'm tempted to disengage, when I, well, frankly, would rather just sort of run and hide, at those times when I want to turn away from the broken legs, when I want to just give up and pretend away the plight of those with fewer advantages than myself, when I want to pretend away the more difficult lives of those with darker skin or less conventional gender identities or those who don't have as much as I do, God comes with a crawler again. Something that travels across the bottom of my screen. Something that reminds me that it's beyond me, that the Spirit is bubbling and stirring and provoking something better than that. I love because I've been loved. I act because someone has acted for me. I speak because someone has already spoken for me. There's another crawler. What if this one went across our noggins? Went by reminding us in those difficult times, reminding us of God's care, God's presence, God's fearless ability to meet need, to come alongside those who hurt. What if we could just be still? Be still and know that I am God. Amen.